Eyes Peeled Stories of Our Times fan. That's you. Next week, we'll have a new name, The Story. If you see The Story in your feed, that's us.
We'll still be telling one remarkable story in depth each day with agenda-setting journalism from Times and Sunday Times correspondents.
We won't have vanished. Our name is just changing. Fear not. So look out for The Story in your podcast feed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Haiti, a country of 11 million people, but currently no leader.
Haiti's prime minister has resigned, as the violence in his country just gets worse.
After decades of instability, the country is now utterly lawless. Violent gangs have taken over, and the most powerful man in Haiti is no longer the prime minister, it's a gang leader named Barbecue.
It's often a clash between police and the gangs, which have essentially taken Haiti hostage. They flaunt their weapons and wealth on TikTok, threatening police and basking in lawlessness.
A 72-hour state of emergency has been declared in Port-au-Prince. Armed gangs carried out two serious jailbreaks.
The U.S. Embassy in Haiti is urging citizens to leave the country.
It sent the Marines to help get non-essential staff out.
How has Haiti sunk into anarchy? How did we get here? Who can fix it? And how on earth did Barbecue get his nickname? You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Manveen Rana. Today, what's happening in Haiti, a country run by gangs?
My name is Mario De La Tour, and I'm a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker based in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I live above the city of Port-au-Prince, where I have a fairly nice bird's eye view of the city, of a part of the city. So I'm well positioned to see events from a distance.
That sounds like the safest way of doing it right now.
You might remember Mario from our last episode on Haiti about a year ago. He's a 68-year-old Haitian-American, and when we last spoke to him, there were shootings and kidnappings happening all over the country. Gangs controlled about 60% of the capital, and I remember we had to record the interview early because later in the day, there'd be too much gunfire in the background. So when we saw that things were kicking off again, we gave him a ring.
Traffic has dwindled down considerably, as you can well imagine. There's no fuel. Very few pedestrians. The streets look somewhat deserted. And mind you, this is Pétionville, which one might call an upscale area of Port-au-Prince. Needless to tell you, if it's like that in Pétionville, what it is like in the rest of the city.
And, you know, for you, Are you able to go out shopping? How do you get food? How do you manage day to day?
Well, it's getting complicated by the day. The gangs control most of the streets, so trucks are unable to distribute fuel to the different pumps. So a lot of goods have perished, and a lot of goods are unable to be schlepped to the different supermarkets, which means that there will be less and less goods on the shelves. And that also means that prices will go up. The price has already gone up in light of the fact that there's no fuel. And trucks are unable, for instance, to deliver drinking water. So that is a problem.
Mario, the last time we spoke to you, things were pretty bad. I think your cleaner had even been kidnapped. Are they much worse now? I mean, is it safe to go out?
Well, you take your chances. It's almost a Russian roulette. I feel fairly safe because I live in a neighborhood, you know, you might call upscale, and the locals are pretty well organized. Let's say as a vigilante group to barricade the road in case there was a kidnapping, in case there were attacks by a gang. I don't know. It's not really up to me. But for the time being, I feel relatively safe.
We'll come back to Mario in a moment. But first, to understand what on earth is going on, we asked our man in the know.
I'm Stephen Gibbs, and I cover Latin America and the Caribbean for The Times and The Sunday Times.
Stephen, the last time you were in Haiti was about 2 years ago, and things were bad then. They seem to be a lot worse now. Just give us a sense of what's been happening. What's the latest?
Well, this is the unfortunate situation of Haiti. You know, every time you think it's hit the bottom, it gets worse. What we've been seeing just in the last few weeks is sort of evidence of just how powerful the gangs that operate in Haiti have become. They control about 80% of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and they're very powerful across the rest of the country. And what we've been seeing is them sort of flexing their muscles, so to speak. And that's included a coordinated alliance of gangs storming two prisons, and several thousand prisoners escaped. At least 30 police stations were attacked. And this was all happening while the Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, was out of the country. And the gangs have sort of openly said, he can't come back into this country. We need a revolution. We are in charge now. And it's been terrifying, of course, for the people of Haiti, and at least 15,000 of them have been made homeless just by this recent series of outrages. So a real descent towards a situation of a failed state.
And in terms of a failed state, it no longer has any real leadership. I mean, the president has resigned.
That's right. Under considerable pressure from the international community, particularly the CARICOM regional grouping of Caribbean nations and the United States and the gangs and the people of Haiti. Ariel Henry, who has been president since 2021 and has repeatedly promised that he would hold democratic elections but hasn't done so, has said he will resign if and when sort of interim government is established. He says that during that process, he's going to remain a caretaker prime minister. His resignation is a concession to what's been going on. What we don't know yet, of course, is whether the gangs are going to accept that. They're talking about a revolution here, and they will probably want to choose who is prime minister.
And America seems to be getting involved.
In the last few weeks, actually, having been under pressure to get more involved, the Secretary of State, Blinken, has been to Kingston in Jamaica, where he met some of those leaders of the Caribbean nations, the CARICOM grouping. He pledged an additional $100 million of U.S. government support for international force that is being put together, led by Kenya, with 1,000 police officers, which, you know, there's some hopes that might go some way towards restoring order in Haiti. But what the United States and others have not done is agreed to put any sort of their own boots on the ground, so to speak. So they're doing this from a distance. They're prepared to fund an international force, But meanwhile, they're also getting out of Haiti. The US has started evacuating its non-essential embassy staff, and other European Union embassies have been doing the same.
Stephen, we know that, you know, Haiti has had a number of crises recently. It's, you know, it's had earthquakes, it's had natural disasters.
The poorest country in the Western Hemisphere has been hit by a major earthquake,
killing thousands of people and leaving millions displaced.
There is no water, there is no electricity. They are short of gloves, sutures, blood, pretty much everything.
But actually, its problems go back far beyond that. Give us a sense of Haiti's history and how it's got into the mess it's currently in.
In the 18th century, Haiti was a French colony and a very prosperous one, exporting coffee and cotton back to Europe. But it was a colony entirely built on slave labor. And in 1804, Haiti shocked the world by becoming the first country to be established as the result of a slave revolution, and at the same time, in fact, the first independent nation in Latin America and the Caribbean. But the euphoria that many Haitians felt then didn't last. There was a conflict that led to the establishment of the Dominican Republic on the east of the island, and probably more seriously, France, the former colonial owner, demanded crippling debt repayments from this new slave republic, the new Republic of Haiti, and those were only finally paid off in the 1940s. It also, in the 20th century, has been part of the US sphere of influence. It was occupied by the United States from 1915 to 1934. And in the 20th century, it was the seat of this extraordinary dynastic dictatorship. Around 60,000 people were killed during the rule of Papa Doc and then Baby Doc.
As president of Haiti, François Duvalier oversaw a regime of fear unlike anything the Caribbean has ever seen. Under his watch, up to 60,000 were murdered, thousands more were tortured or driven from their homes, all while the rest of society plunged into soul-crushing poverty.
And there was also a very serious brain drain, with thousands of Haitians leaving for exile. And I mean, there's been persistent political instability since then. There was a coup to oust the elected leader Aristide in 1991. He then returned to power, then he was ousted again in 2004. In 2017, Haiti had yet another president, Jovenel Moïse. He was elected then. And there was a moment of hope. He was seen as a something of a political outsider, entrepreneur, businessman. His sort of tag during his campaigning was that he was the banana man, because he was a banana farmer. And one of his pitches was that Haiti should become much less dependent on aid. It should sort of build up its own agriculture. His popularity was pretty short-lived. And by 2019, there were complaints that he was ruling out outside the rule of law. There were rumors that a lot of aid that had gone to the country had gone missing. There were large protests on the streets calling for him to stand down. He's very, very stubborn, refused to do so. And then, in an absolutely sort of globally shocking moment in 2021, when he was in his house with his wife and two of his grown-up children, in the middle of that night, the villa was raided by a group of Colombian mercenaries, and Jovenel Moïse was killed.
So, Stephen, we've just heard a little potted history of how we got here. That took us to the assassination in 2021. What happened next?
Well, there was a pretty clear vacuum of power after President Moïse was assassinated, and indecision about who would be the prime minister. Claude Joseph was acting as prime minister when Moïse was assassinated, but Ariel Henry had been appointed to take over just before the president was assassinated. So there was a sort of battle for power, really, between those two men, Henri and Joseph. In the end, Henri, a former neurosurgeon, very much seen as a sort of safe pair of hands, won that battle largely because the major Western powers, including the United States, Germany and Canada and others, said, you know, he is the man for the job. And the sort of thinking was that he was a sort of relatively non-political operator who would calm things down. But he totally failed, really. You know, he said he pledged to improve security in Haiti. As we all know, got a lot worse. Just last year, more than 8,000 people were either murdered or kidnapped or extorted. And he's become increasingly unpopular. And he, of course, was never elected. He was appointed by this group, really, of international ambassadors in Port-au-Prince. So there was always a legitimacy question. And what we've seen just in the last sort of 12 months, really, is the gang saying, you know, this guy should not be prime minister. He has no support. He's unelected. And the dangerous thing for Haiti is that message from the gangs is sort of resonated with the people. So the people of Haiti, who in many ways hate the gangs, they're being kidnapped by them and extorted, do support that message. So that, I think, has really woken up the international community to the danger of not sort of solving at least part of the problem by making sure that Ariel Henry does agree to resign. And that's what we've just seen recently.
He's gone now. So who is effectively in charge?
He's nominally still in charge because he hasn't actually completely resigned until this national commission, which will be a body made up of non-politicians, we're hearing, until it sort of becomes the administrator of Haiti. But yeah, we've got this problem of a power vacuum. And while that vacuum continues, the gangs are so sort of in exactly the right position to fill it.
Coming up, how does a country function when gangs are in charge? And how did the most powerful gang leader, Barbecue, get his nickname? That's in just a moment. But first, just a quick reminder that this podcast is changing, without a coup and not even a hint of gang warfare. From next week, we'll be known as The Story. So that's what you'll see in your feed. The name is changing, but we'll still be bringing you one story in depth every day with the best guests and investigations that you won't hear anywhere else. So please do look out for us as The Story from next week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tell me about the gangs. We've talked about them before on the podcast, and the characters who run them, who seem to wield an awful lot of power in Haiti at the moment.
That's right. The most notorious gang leader in Haiti at the moment is this character who's widely known as Barbecue, Jimmy Jerezier.
How do you get a nickname like that?
He's not shy of publicity, Mr. Barbecue, and he's been asked precisely that question, why have you got this nickname? He claims it's entirely innocent, that his mother used to sell barbecue chicken on the streets of Port-au-Prince, and it's a sort of in honour to his beloved mother. But his enemies suggest it's because he has a reputation for burning his victims. He's a former elite police officer who's sort of reinvented himself as what he claims is a revolutionary leader, and has quite a lot of power because he has his contacts within the police force. So he's a poacher turned gamekeeper, perhaps you could say, almost. But he's the most high profile of the gang leaders, and he's leads an alliance he calls the G9, which is an alliance of many of the gangs in Haiti. And he says, you know, this is the conversion of criminal gangs into a sort of political movement.
Just tell us, what's happened to the normal institutions, the infrastructure of state? You know, is there an effective army?
Well, Haiti disbanded its army formally in 1995 because that army had been involved in so many coups and was actually linked rather closely to the Papa Doc and Baby Doc dictatorships. There have been moves to reinstate that army, but it's been very slow progress. The sort of main security force is the police, which is well funded in many ways by the international community, but is still outgunned by these gangs. I mean, I've seen with my own eyes heavily armed Haitian police forces, but I've also seen these stockpiles of weapons that come into the country that don't go to the police, but do go to the gangs.
How bad could this get? I mean, what are the fears of what happens next?
Just in the last few weeks, we're hearing from agencies, aid agencies, that about an additional 15,000 people are homeless. Then you have the problem of those aid agencies that are feeding about half the entire population of the country, whether they can operate. And, you know, this is all really done on a tightrope, and it doesn't take much for very vulnerable people to fall off that tightrope. So if this isn't improved, if there's more of a drift towards a civil war, which is to an extent what we're seeing now, there could be famine and all the other programs, the health programs, etc., get disrupted. There's no question at all that Haiti is in a very, very precarious situation.
And I mean, was it always inevitable that it would be like this? You know, were there opportunities in the past when, you know, things could have been so different for Haiti?
I don't think any of this is completely inevitable. The problem really was sown during the Duvalier dictatorships and the aftermath, when there wasn't proper sort of continued state building. Instead, there was this very, very aid-dependent country, very weak institutions, overpopulation's been a problem too. You know, it's half of a, or a third of a smallish island, and there are limits to how many people it can support there. I mean, all of the problems of the world seem to sometimes have descended on Haiti. Another issue there is deforestation. If you look at Haiti versus its neighbor, the Dominican Republic, I've flown a few times from one to the other. You go over a relatively green, fertile Dominican Republic, and then you can just see the border and the mountains of Haiti, beautiful though they are, have largely been deprived of their trees, something that goes back actually to the French colonial times. But that has brought on additional problems. It means that agriculture is more difficult to support. If there's a tropical storm there, people get killed by flooding, et cetera, et cetera. So massive sort of infrastructural problems there. And sadly, you know, when you're there, you can't help thinking we need to start again here. Of course, that's in reality impossible. But the problems do seem so, so deep there.
I understand that there are some people offering to step in and fix the problem, particularly the president of El Salvador. Tell us about that.
President Bukele of Salvador, you may recall, has had quite a lot of success against gangs in his country through a ultra sort of hardcore approach, which is arresting without trial and imprisoning 70,000 gang members just for being suspected gang members. So there's been a dramatic reduction in crime in El Salvador, and people who, you know, question the tactic will say that, you know, that the country has been transformed. Bukele has therefore looked at Haiti and said, you know, if you want us to fix it, if you pay us, we're going to fix it. Now, again, this is easier said than done. The gangs in El Salvador were not as heavily armed and as arguably as rich as the ones in Haiti, or sort of as entrenched. But it will be interesting to see whether other countries take up Bukele on his offer and whether he can fulfill it if people say, yep, okay, you know, come and help us.
Mario, let's talk about solutions. For you, sitting in Haiti right now, seeing the gangs running so much of it, do you want the international community to step in? What would help?
Well, it's a trick question, and I'll tell you why. Haiti has a long history, over a century of foreign intervention. Well, it made matters even worse. So now, this talk of sending a mission, the country that would take the lead is Kenya. Well, I'm hearing now that Kenya is, in light of the fact that the prime minister, it seems, has resigned, is saying, well, wait a minute, maybe they're having second thoughts about participating. The U.S. is really pressing for this, though. But if Kenya now is having second thoughts, well, we're back to square one. It's almost like they'll have to find another country to lead this mission. But Port-au-Prince is looking very much like what Somalia looked like in terms of the amount of weapons and bullets flying. So you need to tackle the issue of security first. And whoever comes in has to accept the fact that they will have to confront local groups that are well-armed, deeply entrenched, who know the terrain. And so it's not going to be a walk in the park.
And Mario, given that huge list of complications, given how difficult it is in Haiti at the moment, will you stay? I remember the last time we spoke, you were toing and froing between America and Haiti. I mean, what's keeping you there?
Well, over the years, when things were a little better and when it seemed like in America there was a Haitian dream, just like there's an American dream, Haiti seemed like a place that was poised to take off. The outlook and the future of Haiti looked promising, if I can say so. Well, it hasn't gotten better. Huh? I mean, I'm 68 years old, and social upheaval and instability has been synonymous to Haiti. So I don't know. It's a tough question. You know, I like to be optimistic, but it's not looking very good.
As you know, on this podcast, we often do updates on stories. So if you're interested in digging deeper into this one, you can go back and listen to our previous episode, Haiti, a Failed State, from last year. Some of the history of the country that we've covered here was taken from that episode. You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, which, remember, from next week becomes The Story, with me, Manveen Rana, and my guests, the documentary filmmaker Mario Della Torre and the Times Latin America correspondent Stephen Gibbs. The producer today was Olivia Case, the executive producer is Kate Ford, and sound design was by Mao Lasseto. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.